Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vohra. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today. Unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vohra.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. There are so many things going wrong in the Democratic and Republican primaries right now. You have Trump, who still doesn't understand that if you bring the best and brightest from around the world to America, you are benefiting the American economy even more than if you brought oil or semiconductors from around the world to America. He doesn't get that there is no more important resource than human intelligence. On the other side, you have Hillary, who has decided that the only solution to every problem is more government, more spending, more taxes. And of course, you have the other Democratic primary candidate, Bernie Sanders, who is telling us that, listen, we can have stuff for free. Apparently, he doesn't realize that when the government's involved, nothing is more expensive than free. If you want to see how expensive free is, look at how much we spend on our free military. With me right now, I have Rhett Smith. And, you know, usually with candidates, I'm pretty nice. But today, because he's a presidential candidate and we're going to have another one on later today, I'm going to give him the tough questions. And unlike the way we do with our other candidates, I'm not going to be nice. Rhett, welcome to the show.
All right. Thank you, Alvin. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for coming to the show. I'm going to ask you a few questions out because, you know, the primaries are heating up. People are excited about all of the Libertarian presidential candidates. They want to know where do the different candidates stand? We're going to talk to another one later on this show, but I'm going to ask you some of the same questions that I'm going to ask him. First question I'm going to ask is if you were going to reduce taxes, well, first, would you reduce taxes? And if so, which taxes would you reduce?
Absolutely. We're going to cut and eliminate taxes.
Okay.
I think that it's obvious that when we're taxing people that are already in a very difficult situation, you know, when they're struggling, why in the world would we be taxing people? This really undermines the basic goal of trying to build a better America. Whether it's income taxes or property taxes or sales taxes, we're, you know, impoverishing the very people that really need a way to pull themselves up, to pull themselves out of their own poverty.
Now, what do you say to the people who say, listen, Candidate Smith, I appreciate what you're saying that no one likes taxes, but what about all the free services that are provided to those people? What do you say to those folks?
Well, this is the richest nation in the world. I think that you know, worrying about a nickel or a dime here when we're talking about trillions of dollars, you know, 10, 20 trillion dollars, even more, we really need to look at the big picture and talk about the way our whole system of money and banking, our whole system of credit operates not only here but on a global scale.
And now you mentioned, you know, banking. You mentioned, you know, credit. You mentioned a lot of these things, and it seems that it's very closely related to something that another one of our presidential candidates talked about on the show last week. And he said that one of the things that's important to him is the idea of currency freedom, which is that you should be able to use gold, silver, ducks, Bitcoin, eggs, cigarettes, whatever you want to as currency, with no restriction by the federal government, which, as you know, right now, that's illegal right now. If I started, you know, minting my coins out of platinum and sold or something like that, or silver or anything, and started using those as currency, that's a federal offense. Now, do you agree with that candidate, or do you disagree?
Who was the candidate, if you don't mind my asking?
Oh, sure. That was Daryl Perry, who was on the show last week.
Okay. Yeah, Daryl Perry. He's a good guy. I think that we're just getting away from the most important issues of this campaign. You know, you can go anywhere in the world and find a way to trade whatever commodity you have, whether it's, you know, precious metals or some kind of national currency or whatever. Trying to say that, you know, our government is not accommodating, this is not going to change the world. You know, however many precious coins or precious metals or whatever currency you have, that's really not the issue. The issue is, how can the United States be a global leader? How can we not only stimulate our own economy, but the whole world's economy is now dependent on the United States? So we need a plan that's going to work, you know, here in the United States, and it's going to work all around the world.
Now,
does that make sense? Does that make sense? In other words,
now that makes sense.
A small issue,
but,
instead of a.
But what are some of the then? What are some of the things in your plan? Before we run out of time in this segment, what are some of the things in your plan that are going to accomplish that?
One of my plans is a Department of Peace. This is an issue that has been around since the beginning of the American Revolution. People don't remember that. That one of the framers actually said, if we're going to have a Department of War, which, of course, that's our Department of Defense, and that's what we used to call the department, that we should also have an Office of Peace, because we cannot just be, you know, the warmonger of planet Earth. We also have to be the peace leader of planet Earth. And this, what I'm foreseeing or wanting to project here is the idea that if we have this paradigm, this economic, what I'm talking about is economic modeling. So mm-hmm. The Department of Peace would be an economic model to demonstrate how, you know, billions of people can work together on a small planet.
Interesting. All right. Well, that is all the time that we have for the segment today. Rhett, thank you so much for being on the show with us today and for sharing your insights and information on your campaign.
Good. Well, I hope that we're going to be a lot more of these, because the American people are hungry for leadership, and we're not getting it from the Republican or Democratic parties. You know, they don't talk about the crucial issues. They, really denigrate other people. So, it's quite appalling that the decline in the level of, political discourse.
Absolutely. And thank you so much. And Rhett, real quick, what is the best website if somebody wants to learn more about your campaign? Where should they go?
President, how to spell my first name right, Rhett, mm-hmm. and it's all one word, the word F-O-R, rhettforpresident.com.
Okay, awesome. Guys, we just finished talking with Rhett Smith. He is running for president. He is one of the many candidates running for president in the Libertarian Party. And if you want to learn more about his campaign, it's rhettforpresident.com.
Finished the debate. Go ahead. Saturday, we were in Richmond, Virginia, and I was debating Gary Johnson.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. And if you guys want to find out more about that debate, you can go to lp.org, find video, text, transcripts, all that kind of great stuff, and find out more about how the different candidates are responding. Now, Rhett is right about one thing. We need to have debate on specific issues. And one of the things that you're going to see from Libertarian candidates in the next few months is that some candidates are going to voluntarily choose to sign various pledges. Now, some of those pledges are going to be written by the candidates themselves. Some will be written by groups of candidates and shared with others. I want you to look at those pledges, and I want you to see, has this candidate signed a pledge on something that you agree with? Now, just because they haven't signed the pledge doesn't mean they won't do it. If there's a candidate you like, you might ask him what he's going to do. But don't accept any half answers. If your question to the candidate is, will you end the war on drugs? If he says, you know, maybe, understand that means nothing. But if that candidate says, absolutely, I'll do whatever I can to end the war on drugs, which so many candidates have, that's somebody that might deserve your support. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We just finished talking with Rhett Smith. We will be right back in a couple minutes with Ben Farmer.
We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
If you are interested in real estate in America's largest city or anywhere, be sure to listen for Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco. Although our focus is on Manhattan and other real estate markets in and around New York City, we'll have plenty of information that will help you successfully buy, sell, and close a transaction no matter where you are in the world. Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. in New York, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. You know, the last year and a half since we started this show, so many amazing things have happened. We've had people who, hearing about the work that candidates are doing to expose corruption, have come out and provided the very files that allowed them to expose corruption. We've had so many candidates who've decided to run for office because they heard other candidates and said, listen, if that person's willing to put in that kind of work to fight for my liberties, well, I'm willing to put in the work to fight for his liberties as well. And one of the most exciting developments we're going to find out about right now, we're going to be talking with Ben Farmer. He's a vice chair of the Libertarian Party of Texas. And just like the vice chair of the Libertarian National Committee myself, he's realized that one of the great ways to reach people is through through the LP Texas's new podcast. And we're going to talk to him about his outreach. We're going to talk to him about, you know, some of the great stuff the candidates are doing. We're going to talk to him about, you know, all the amazing stuff happening in Texas right now. Ben, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Arvin. Thanks for having me.
You know, it's so incredible to see what's going on in Texas. You can go to lp.org, look at the candidates, and you just see Texan after Texan after Texan, just so many people running for different offices. Now, how are you guys, what is the secret? What is allowing you guys to get so many people to make that commitment to fight for each other's freedoms?
Well, I think it's a couple of different things, Arvin. Texans just typically have a culture of anti-authoritarianism that libertarianism really appeals to, just kind of the Texas culture itself. So we might be a victim of our own just culture for that matter. But as a result of having stood on the shoulders of giants from years past, we've been able to put together an actual strategic plan over the last 18 months, I guess, since Kurt and I were elected to chair and vice chair, and we've enacted that plan. Mm-hmm. And what it comes down to is most state parties that we look around the country, most state parties basically are being run by one or two people, you know, maybe a handful of people who do just kind of all of the work. Well, what we did is we put in an actual, like, a corporate structure where we have different department heads and we have different volunteers. It's all volunteer. We have no paid staff anymore. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to slide in about 40 people into specific roles. And we've just been able to kind of oversee their work that way. So we're able to unleash a lot of different things instead of getting bogged down in just day-to-day business.
Now, what are some of the, I mean, I've seen the some of the aspects of the strategic plan, but what would you say are some of the highlights for the other state and county chairs who listen to this program, or those who are thinking of running for that position? What are some of the highlights that you would say are important to share with others?
Sure. So to me, the most important thing that we've done is we've created a political action department. So what this department does is they actually put forth a lobbying effort in Austin. And I was honored enough to be the director of the political action department during the 84th legislative session that we had last year in Texas. Mm-hmm. And so what we were able to do was actually be at the Capitol building, influencing policy, writing policy, creating coalitions, blocking bad laws. And that, to me, is what is most important. I think libertarians in particular, since we don't have a lot of elected officials, levying some sort of an actual lobbying effort is where we can take direct action now. So to me, that's probably the most important thing we've done. Of course, we've created a marketing department, a PR department, which I now am in charge of. Mm-hmm. And through that PR department, we started a radio show about, 8 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And since that radio show has been on, our donations have just gone through the roof. New donations. And last night, Arvin, I'm happy to report we had our first conventions, our precinct conventions. Mm-hmm. And across the state, we have double the delegates that we had in 2014. Times two.
That's incredible.
Yeah, here in Travis County, we had 31 delegates to the Travis County Convention in 2014. We have 72 coming this Saturday to our county convention. And that's just been the case all across the state. I think we're just living in a very libertarian moment.
You know, it's interesting. You know, there's a lot of folks who are saying that this might not be just a moment. This might be a generational shift. And I don't know if you've seen this latest Gallup poll. What they asked in this poll, they asked basically two questions. The first question was an economics question. Do you think that the government should do more to get involved in the economy or do less? That was the first question. The next was a social issues question. Should the government do more to encourage people to do specific actions, or should they let people do whatever they want? Mm-hmm. The largest group, 27%, was the people who said, you know, agreed with the positions that are libertarian. Now, they might not be self-identified libertarians yet, but, I mean, that's kind of the first step, right?
Yeah, and on that same report, it reported that just 10 years ago when they asked that question, only 18% of people were referring to their issue positions that way. That's another thing that we have done in Texas, Arvin, is we have targeted millennials. Every single political science study you read says you really only have between the ages of about 18 and 30 to kind of cement people into voting for your party. Yeah, people can change afterwards, but for the most part, 18 to 30. And over this last year, the millennial generation has actually become the largest voting generation in the United States. Mm-hmm. They're also tired of the old parties. I mean, they are the generation that believes that gay married couples should be able to defend their marijuana fields with guns. Mm-hmm. And that's what we represent. So, yeah, we have made a specific effort to go more digital, to become the party of the 21st century, to kind of let go of some of the older things and make it young and cool.
And it's been especially exciting to see the force. I mean, I know that sometimes when you're a libertarian activist in a small state, maybe not quite as big as Texas, you sometimes get discouraged. You say, like, man, you know, is this any of this making any difference? Is it changing anything? You know, we all, like, you know, libertarians, one of the biggest media outlets that we look at is Reason Magazine. You know, they do so much great writing about libertarian ideas and libertarian thoughts. Now, here's what's interesting. The world of media works on the same principle as the world of business. And if they have more customers in a given area, they're going to try to appeal to those customers. Right now, the super left-leaning, couldn't be more in favor of big government newspaper, The Washington Post, has now been hiring Reason staff writers because they know that's what people want to read. I mean, that's a huge transformation.
Yeah, and that's Washington Post just, I think, 2 days ago, printed 13 attack articles on Bernie Sanders in 13 hours.
Wow.
I mean, they've really completely, I'm not going to say completely come over to our side, but our side is popular. I mean, we are the actual populist movement. When people call Trump a populist, it doesn't make sense to me. Nobody I know has those beliefs. Everybody I know has libertarian beliefs, whether or not they identify as a libertarian. We're the wave of the future, man. That's here we come. And watching the Republicans, disintegrate before our eyes, that's what we've expected. We've expected that all along. So I'm excited because here we come.
Now let's talk about, some of the issues that are popular among, Texas voters, either state, federal, local, whatever. What are the types of cutting government? What parts of government are people most excited to cut or dismantle or defund?
IRS is always going to be one of the tops of the list here. But I can tell you what's going on right now. Well, actually happened in the last legislative session where concealed carry versus constitutional carry, Second Amendment issues are always going to be a big deal down here. You know what else is a big deal? Is Texas secession. That is kind of a big deal. You really can't avoid it. It's always kind of just underneath the surface of pretty much the way anyone talks about the federal government around here. So that's, it's always just kind of under the surface. Of course, Texans do feel like we're in our own country, and we're very proud to tell everyone that.
Now,
I can tell you what we're going to be working on in the next legislative session is a couple of bills for right to try, which is if you've been diagnosed with a terminal illness, you should have the right to try drugs that aren't necessarily approved by the FDA. We're going to be looking into ending. We still have straight ticket voting in Texas. I think we're one of only 7 states left. So that's going to be a big attack point for us just in the Libertarian Party. And I know there's a couple more, but they're not coming to mind right now.
Now, what's really interesting about some of those things is a lot of those are what I call first step things to cutting something bigger. So, for example, when we talk about, the right to try, well, really, what's that the first phase of? That's the first phase of if you can try something when you're dying, you should really realistically be able to try something any other time you want to.
Sure.
And that's the first phase, in my opinion, of ending the FDA. We all know it's costing more lives than it's saving. Dr. Ruhr has done so much great work with getting that information out there. But that's like a first step, and it's so exciting that all of us are working on these amazing first steps.
Yeah. And that's the trick right there, Arvin, is you said the key word, which is working. And a lot of times in this movement in particular, we have a lot of people who, we always joke about, the Libertarian Party is 1 million opinions and 12 hands. And really, we need more people to actually do the work. It's pretty easy. As excited as I am of the precinct turnouts last night, it's pretty easy to show up at the precinct and county conventions and vote, and then we'll see you again in 2 years. We really do need dedicated people who are willing to actually do the work, the actual work that's necessary. And this is something that happens all across the country, is somebody gets really excited, they're totally qualified to do something, and we burn them out in 6 months. So what we've tried to do is spread the responsibility out over a number of different positions to try to minimize that. Of course, there's still more work than what we can handle. I'm sure you're aware of, I'm sure it's the same thing on the national level.
And there's a huge amount of truth to exactly that. Some of the things that we're working on is exactly what you're saying, spreading the work out, encouraging people to act politely, and making sure that we stay focused on that goal of cutting all levels of government. And that's, I think, really the biggest part of it. We are actually out of time, Ben. So I want to thank you so much for being on the show and for sharing this amazing insight on the Texas strategic plan, all the work that you guys have been doing, and I think for really inspiring some of the other smaller states to find ways that they can do something similar.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would encourage those state chairs to go to lptexas.org and just have a gander, look around and see what we've done.
Absolutely. So if you guys want to find out more, it's lptexas.org. And then if you're new, if you're not already involved in your state party, but you want to get involved, you're hearing all the stuff that Ben's talking about, and you're saying, listen, I can do some PR. I like marketing. I like social media. I want to do legislative stuff. I want to do lobbying. I want to do all that kind of great stuff. Go to lp.org/states and find out how you can get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We just finished talking with Ben Farmer, Vice Chair of the Libertarian Party of Texas. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
Psych Up Live with host Dr. Suzanne Phillips is an insider's glimpse at a life from a psychological perspective. It's a look at what matters to us. Why do we laugh? How do we cope with stress? Are men and women really that different? What is it about our relationships? How are they formed? How they work out? And why they sometimes don't? Every week is something new to engage you. Psych Up Live is heard every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll turn up your perspective on life.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. My next guest is one of the other presidential candidates who is running for the Libertarian presidential nomination. His name is Cecil. And Cecil, how do you pronounce your last name? Well, I want to make sure I don't mess that up.
It's like Prince without the PR.
Ince. Okay, awesome. It's Cecil Ince. He is running for president. And we're going to ask him some of the same questions that we've been asking the other presidential candidates. And Cecil, my first question to every candidate is always the same, which is, if you are elected, what parts of government, if any, are you going to reduce or defund or dismantle or cut in any other way?
That's a large list on my campaign platform. Department of Education, the Federal Reserve, the IRS, the Department of Commerce. I mean, I can keep going down the list. If it's not constitutionally, if it's not appointed by the Constitution, it needs to be dismantled. It needs to be done away with. In some instances, we have gotten into such a socialist system that we need to get away from that. And some things like Social Security and Medicaid or Medicare need to be turned over to the states with and lock out the enrollment program until the last recipient has passed away. That needs to be delegated to the states. It's not the role of the federal government. So getting rid of Social Security and Medicaid would be a phase-out program because it's been so so ingrained into our system and people are so reliant and dependent upon that, but it's not the role of the federal government. So, you know, every department, even the EPA needs to be done away with, and that's one of the things I want to do is try to reduce the federal government to its constitutional bare bones.
Mm-hmm. And now when you're talking about reducing it to its constitutional bare bones, we're talking about eliminating the vast majority of, I mean, that's the most of the federal departments, most of the federal spending. Is that about correct?
That is correct. There is nothing in the Constitution that authorizes for the IRS. There's nothing that authorizes in the Constitution for the EPA. These are departments that were set up, you know, since the 1940s and some before that, but definitely around the 1940s and 1930s, a lot of these departments started to get introduced into the federal government, where the federal government started doing what you hear a lot recently about government overreach. And And people gotten so used to these programs that have been forced upon them that it just seems like, oh, that must be the role of the federal government, which it is not.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about the other side of that. I mean, one side is like we have less government, and that's good. No Department of Education, that means no Common Core, no inflated college tuitions, none of those negative side effects of the Department of Education. But there's that other half, which says that now, theoretically, we could reduce taxes. Would you support a reduction in taxes to go along with this massive reduction in spending?
Well, massive reduction in spending, we would almost eliminate our deficit, especially when we eliminate the Federal Reserve Bank and we revert back to the gold and silver standard. We're going to see, you'd see a large change in our economy, especially when we delegate things back over to the states where it belongs under the 9th and 10th Amendment. That there is going to save our economy more than anything else is reducing government. And that's the there's nothing but good that can come from that.
Let's talk about some of the more controversial issues. I want to talk about some of the things that a lot of people in the country aren't so sure about. One big one is drugs. You know, a lot of Americans feel that drugs are very harmful and damaging, and they really think the war on drugs and drug prohibition is absolutely necessary. Where do you stand on that?
Well, where I stand on that is the drug prohibition has caused more harm than good, and a recent report came out that the cartels have been hurting because of some of the states have gone legalization with recreational legalization. It's been hurting the black market when you make these things legal. And when you make them legal at the local and state levels, the people have more control over the substance rather than back alley deals. That has been crippling. We have an epidemic. The biggest marketing tactic that the drug cartels have is the war on drugs, and that creates addiction. They want you to be addicted to these substances so they can continue to perpetuate their profits and grow the black market economy with these illegal drugs. When we legalize them, we have control over them. Colorado is a great model for the free market economy for cannabis. I mean, it's these local groups, organizations have instituted dispensaries, and they are very professional, they're very clean, and there has been a reduction in a lot of crimes and people getting incarcerated for possessions. It's a great model, but I like what Missouri's doing. Missouri's getting ready to do exactly is getting ready to do a lot more than just recreational use. They want to make it just as legal as tomato plants, which would create a big boom in the agricultural economy for ethanol, for hemp, for rope, for all kinds of products that can be grown agriculturally with the hemp plant.
And there's two things that I want to just point out real quick to our listeners. Now, some of you guys are saying, like, what kind of a crackpot magazine is saying that like legalizing is hurting cartels? A lot of different magazines, but if you do a quick search, you'll see that Time Magazine is one of those, you know, out there crazy magazines that's telling the facts that legalizing drugs is demolishing cartels, because 40% of cartels' drug trade relies exclusively on marijuana. And I don't know about you guys, but any business that I've ever heard of that it takes a 40% hit is going to be in a world of pain. 40%.
Yes.
That's enough to demolish any. I mean, like, God, I would hate to lose 40% of my business. I can't even imagine how bad that would be. But for a cartel that's so complex, losing 40%, there's not a thing that most businesses can really survive very easily. The other thing I wanted to add to what you said is that you're right. It's not just about marijuana. It's also about the great other uses of hemp, including high-end cosmetics, shampoos, paper, all that kind of stuff. So even if you don't care about drugs, and even if you don't care about money, you don't want to have more of your money back for God knows what reason, but you do care about these other great benefits. If you care about paper and cosmetics, that's one more reason to support some of these things. I want to talk about the other big controversial issues on that libertarians that often people don't. They're not comfortable with, which is guns. What are your Second Amendment views?
My Second Amendment views are very simple. I believe it was said that someone asked who is the militia, and the answer was from this congressman who was with the Continental Congress. I forget his name off the top of my head, but he said that the militia is every citizen except for a few elected representatives. Mm-hmm. You know, we are should be the standing military in times of war that we could be called up. My Second Amendment view is that everyone who wants to own a weapon should be able to purchase one freely. Now, a lot of people think that we want to arm everybody. Well, I don't want to force someone who doesn't want to own a gun to have one. That should be their choice not to have one if they don't want one. Mm-hmm. The right to bear arms should not be forced upon in any way, either for or against, on any person. And it should be companies should be able to sell their product, and we should be able to freely engage in buying that product. Other than that, I mean, the federal government needs to really stay out of that industry altogether, except for the military. The military needs their weapons, needs to produce ammunition. The right to bear arms is one of the most sacred rights of the Constitution because, you know, we need to defend ourselves from foreign invasion. Classic example of how the Second Amendment should apply and would work is look at the shootings that have happened in these public places where you don't have a right to bear arms. If you had the right to bear arms, and you could have protected, they could have protected themselves from these militant people entering into these places trying to harm others. The right to bear arms is so that we can defend ourselves from foreign invasion, so we can defend ourselves from our government, defend ourselves from everything that can threaten us, where they would come in and they would bully us around because, well, guess what? We're unprotected. Mm-hmm. It's time that we start protecting ourselves.
Now, we just have a couple minutes left, but I want to ask you real quickly, do you see any need for reduction in our military, our use of our military, military spending, military bases, anything like that?
Yeah, definitely. That's one of the largest parts of the federal budget. We spend more money in defense than we do for anything else. The federal military, which was federalized around the Civil War, needs to be reverted back to a union military that is by the states and ran by the states. And we need to get away from this federalization of everything and get back to the core principles of the United States, this free republic, where voluntary men within every county were members of the local militia if they chose to be. And that from there that they pulled into the state guard, and the state guards were all collectively joined in a union of this military for the common defense of the people. I strongly stand against standing militaries, especially during times of war. The only main thing that we need during times of peace is a Coast Guard and a national defense, a very small, bare bones, and in case of invasion, we can activate our militia, we can activate our forces. It needs to be done by the states. We need the federal government back off of it. Congress needs to be commander-in-chief of our armed services.
And before you go, let me ask you one thing, just a logistical thing. If somebody wants to find out more about your campaign, where's the best place for them to go?
Well, you can find me on Facebook, Cecil Ince for President. And you can find me at www.restore-liberty.weebly.com. That's a free account right now. I'm in the process of getting the actual full site of restore-liberty.com up and running here soon.
And guys, you can look, all you can see all that, all his latest posts, all that kind of stuff on Facebook. It's all up over there. And you can learn more about Cecil Ince and all the other libertarian candidates for president if you go to lp.org, and you can see them side by side, see where they, you know, they can look at some debate footage and all that kind of great stuff. It's all over YouTube. You can find more about them at lp.org, and it's in a lot of other channels as well. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We just finished talking with Cecil Ince. He's also running for president, seeking the Libertarian Party nomination. We'll be right back.
stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Family caregivers face some tough challenges every day in caring for a partner, parent, child, sibling, friend, neighbor, or even coworker. You are there to provide the care that these people need after everyone else has gone home. Family Caregivers Unite with Dr. Gordon Atherley will provide you with a social networking experience. You'll hear from experts and others who are experiencing the same things, and together you will promote a common cause. Tune in to Family Caregivers Unite, live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Have you checked out Teen Wealth Radio? It's a show for teens, their parents, and educators. Hosted by Brandy England, along with regular weekly contributors, Teen Wealth Radio will cover the topics that teens need to talk about. Plus, we discuss a book of the week and a movie of the week. And each show will offer a challenge to our teen listeners that they can share on our private Facebook group page. Be sure to tune in to Teen Wealth Radio, live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora, and we're just about to talk with our final guest. His name is Jonathan Schell. He's running for Congress. Jonathan, can you hear me?
Yes.
Jonathan, thank you so much for being on the show. Jonathan, what are some of the areas of government that you would see downsized?
Oh, well, Arvin, there's a lot of areas we need to downsize when it comes to government.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly branches of the government that regulate freedom, basically.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many. You have the TSA, the ATF, the DEA. I mean, the list is pretty long.
You know, it's fascinating that while the free market makes things faster, the government there to step in to make things slower. I mean, it used to be that you had to wait in line when you got to the airport to get your tickets and all that kind of stuff. And now with those kiosks, it takes like 2 seconds. But all the time you used to spend in that line, you're now spending in the government line. I mean, an airport thing could be a 5-minute procedure, but now it's like an hour-long procedure. Let's talk about some of these areas. You know, one of the biggest areas that so many candidates have been talking about is Department of Education, Department of Homeland Security. Would you see yourself working to downsize either or both of those?
Oh, absolutely. The less government we have in our personal lives and our children's lives, the better. Just like you've seen with healthcare, the government has grossly gotten involved in healthcare, and now it's just a mess. It's a mess. I mean, the middle class is disappearing because of healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about specifically what's going on in your district. You're in the 8th District of Missouri. That's correct, right?
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about what are some of the areas that you think that people are especially electrified about downsizing, about just getting rid of in the federal government?
Well, I'll give you an example. I went to a rally last week. It was the Missouri against the DNR cash and land grab. What's going on is the governor has decided that he wants to buy up more land for the conservation department, basically. They took money from a settlement that was supposed to be used in the lead belt to help, for instance, clean up Fredericktown's water, and there was numerous things to clean up lead messes and whatnot in the lead belt.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing that. The governor's buying up more conservation land parks that people don't want in Missouri. We can't take care of what we got now. Now he wants to buy up more land and make bigger parks. And it's just, it's crazy. You know, people are starting to stand up about it, but, you know, there's not much that can be done. It's federal money that's being used. So even our representatives are kind of helpless right now.
I want to talk about some of the same controversial issues that I've asked some of the other candidates. There's these, the two just most, I think, highly emotional and highly controversial issues right now involve the war on drugs and involve the Second Amendment. So I want to ask you about your views in both of those areas. First of all, let me ask you your views on the war on drugs.
Well, the war on drugs has been failing for a long time. I think it's time for us to just, you know, stop beating the dead dog. You know, it's dead. The war on drugs will never be effective. The amount of money that we spend on the war on drugs could easily be spent to help treatment or in other areas. I mean, I'm not one for taxes anyway, but if we're going to charge taxes, why not use them for something productive? And the war on drugs certainly isn't productive.
Let me ask you this. Would you before we get to the Second Amendment and the right to self-defense, what areas of taxes would you see yourself working to cut if you get elected to Congress?
Oh, my gosh. Definitely the income tax. That's the biggest one. I mean, you've got a country that's so far in debt, and people aren't productive right now. You know, there's not going to be new business started in this country if we keep charging an income tax. There's no room for people to expand and grow. You know, we've got people that are so far in debt, and we're still charging income tax. You know, it's just, I don't understand it. Some people think it's okay, too. That's what disgusts me. You have people that will actually stand up and protect the income tax. I don't get it.
And, you know, the worst thing about the income tax, there's two things. One, it hurts people. It takes their money. It takes their labor. It takes it and uses it. But the worst part about it is it uses it for such heinously immoral things. Things like the war on drugs. You know,
we're bailing out corporate businesses. You know, I remember when we bailed out the businesses, and people like me were just sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Businesses that don't succeed fail. That's just like that. You know, I don't get bailed out. If I start a business and it fails, the government doesn't come and bail me out. The government lets me fail. And that's what should have happened to these big banks and these businesses. They should have failed.
Let me ask you before we run out of time about the other side of it, that highly controversial issue, which is the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. What are your views on that?
Oh my gosh, that is one of our most sacred rights, the right to bear arms. That's what keeps us free from tyranny. People don't understand that, especially the Democrats. Most people that support the Democratic Party, they want to whine about, they're terrorism. That's the main excuse they use. I'll not sacrifice freedom for security. And that's what people are so willing to do nowadays. I can't understand that. Who would sacrifice freedom for security? People have just lost it.
Now, what's especially interesting about that, I mean, we always have this dilemma, you know, this idea of this dilemma, but sometimes it's not even a dilemma. I mean, there's I think, a very strong argument to be made that if we had constitutional open carry for everybody, we would also have more security because no one could really do a terrorist attack if everyone's armed. You know, they couldn't use guns anyway. I mean, no one could really do a school shooting if, you know, all the people that are armed, or even better, if they just don't know whether people are armed or not and don't want to take the risk.
Exactly.
You can't really do that much.
You're going to be more scared. You're not going to rob somebody if you think there's a chance of a shotgun under their coat or that they might have a pistol in their shoe. You know, it's a much better society if the fear is unknown.
And that's one of the great things. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, you hear from all these people that are saying, well, you know, people should just kind of like stay indoors all the time or whatever. The idea being that if you happen to be smaller than the average person, or maybe you're afraid because you're a woman, or you're afraid because you're a big, tough, super strong guy, but you're not as strong as five other big, tough, super strong guys. I mean, they're saying that you should just stay inside all the time. And to me, that's just ridiculous. You know, we all have the right to walk any street we want at any time of day or night that we want to, and have the right to defend ourselves as according to the danger that we perceive. That's fundamentally, you know, just common sense.
You know, I'll tell you, I called the Attorney General's office earlier. It was, let's see, the mid last month, I believe it was, after I had emailed the governor's office with questions about open carry and concealed carry. And basically, nobody was giving me any answers. I finally got a hold of an attorney at their offices, and they proceeded to let me know a little bit about open carry and concealed carry, and about how, well, you know, you can't carry a nightstick concealed, and you can't carry brass knuckles. But did you know in Missouri, our laws are so crazy that a woman can't even carry legally a taser in her purse concealed?
Wow.
Yeah, what kind of state have we built that people will accept that as being the truth? How far have we come to throw away our freedom that we will allow the government to make laws like that to control us? I'm sorry, but I, for one, am sick of this. I'm tired of it.
And that's why I'm so proud to have folks like you running as libertarians to work to downsize government and to protect freedom. Jonathan, we are out of time, but thank you so much for being on today's show.
Thank you, Arvin. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
And guys, if you want to learn more about Jonathan's campaign, you can go to Jonathan, can you tell me the name of that website one more time?
It's www.shell4congress.com, and that's the number 4.
All right, shell4congress.com. Thanks so much, guys, for listening today. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We just finished talking with Jonathan Shell. He's running for U.S. Congress in Missouri's 8th District. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening to Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvin Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.